Hare Krishna. On behalf of everyone here in Radha Gopinath Temple, we welcome you to our Sunday festival. Yesterday and this morning, we were discussing how Krishna, the Lord, personally and through his intimate associates, have taught us to be saragrahi, to seek the essence. The regulative principles of devotional service. Sravana kirtana smarana bandana pada sevana dasyade pujana saki jana atmani vedana. These nine processes of bhakti are crucial for bringing us to that essence. But it is that essence we should be seeking in ourselves, in every situation that comes upon us, and in everyone that comes upon us, to see it, to serve it. That essence is that we are eternal servants of Krishna, that every living being is part of Krishna, that the entire cosmic manifestation is Krishna's energy. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. To the degree we awaken our love for Krishna, we can actually see Krishna through his energy everywhere, in everyone. And therefore, in every situation, our meditation is, how could I serve? Janasya moho yamaha mameti. When we are under the illusion of forgetfulness of who we really are, then we think in terms of, I am this body and mind, and whatever I can possibly acquire is mine. My family, my body, my land, my religion, my nationality, my intelligence, my abilities. But according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that is the basis of illusion and suffering. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. When love of Krishna begins to awaken within our hearts, we see everything as Krishna's energy. This microphone, this seat, everybody we see, from the insects to the birds to the trees to the mountains and the rocks to the buildings, the sun, the moon, the sky, every person, whoever they may be. When we see it in relation with Krishna, we simply want to serve with love. That is the liberated platform. We were discussing Pundarik Vidyanidhi, how he appeared like a very materialistic person, very attached to material things. Messages. This will help me not forget. And we, what was I saying? Pundarik Vidyanidhi. But he was the greatest devotee, so much so that the Lord and all of the greatest of the saints, they honored him as their father, their guru. And on the other hand, we have Putana. Putana appeared in the guise of the most cultured, compassionate, motherly, beautiful goddess of fortune. But in her heart, she was wicked, envious, and cruel. There's a beautiful story in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam of an avatar, a partial expansion of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. His name was Rishabh Dev. He became the king of the world, and he ruled it with such morality, such efficiency, and most of all, with such compassion of devotion. The greatest compassion is our example in life. Yad yad acharati strestas tad tad evitarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tad anuvartate. Krishna tells in Gita that what great people do, common people will naturally follow. Whatever standard they set, the world will pursue. How interesting Rishabh Dev was. He taught in so many ways. The beginning of his life, the middle, and especially, we'll speak something about the last phase of his life. Rishabh Dev, as the king, he taught everyone the highest example by his own compassion, selfless service to every living being, devotion to God. He was playing the role of a devotee, performing yajna, doing everything properly, and making sure everybody had everything. Everyone had nice clothes. Everyone had nice food, and everyone had nice medical services. Everyone had nice homes, properties. Everyone was encouraged, appreciated. And most of all, everyone was enthused and inspired with faith in God to practice the path of devotional service, and in this life be liberated once and for all. Therefore, everyone loved him. And when he saw, he had 100 sons, when he saw that they were capable of taking the throne, he instructed them. It was his last instructions. Those instructions, Srila Prabhupada explains, were the perfect, most precise and needful instructions, not only for family people, but for sannyasis, brahmacharis, everyone. He gave instructions of how to live every moment of our life free from the infatuation of materialistic egos and attachments, and developing total attachment to the loving service of the Supreme Lord who is within the heart of every living being. And at the end of these incredible instructions, he told all his sons that I am requesting you to cooperate with your brother Bharat. I am appointing him to be the king. He said, do not have material conceptions. Do not be envious. Serve your brother and assist him in every way in ruling the world. Very important instruction. It was like everything else he told them. Now there was something practical they can do. Rishabhdev explained how people get entangled in material bondage, pungsasriya maithuni bhavametam, and how to get out of it. Mahatsevam dwaram ahuravamuktes tamodwaram yoshita sangi sangam. By associating with great saints, mahats, the doors to liberation are open. And by associating with people who are too much addicted and attached to gross and subtle illusory pleasures, who want to be the controller, the enjoyer, the proprietor, then the doors to further bondage are opened for us. How to accept a guru, how to worship the Lord with all your heart. That the ultimate and only true goal of life is pure love for the Lord. And then he gave something practical for them to do, which is going to be a challenge. Be the servant of the servant of the servant. Accept your brother as your superior and assist him in every way, serve him in every way. Now please understand, these sons of Rishab, they were, every single one of them were extremely qualified. There was the nine yogendras who were powerful renunciates in every way. Some of the most great learned scholars that ever lived on earth. Even Krishna in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam was quoting their incredible teachings. And some of what the nine yogendras spoke are the most important verses in all the Vedas, telling us about the nature of the different incarnations of God, about the Yuga Dharmas. And then his other sons, they were trained to be very, very powerful rulers. But you all serve Bharat. That's a good challenge, isn't it? Because usually if you have some power, you want your own kingdom. You want your own, you compete. But they accept it. Don't be envious. If there's any way to apply the principles of bhakti in a practical way, it's to not be envious. Otherwise, nothing is understood. Krishna told Arjuna, you can understand these teachings because you are not envious. If we're envious, we can precisely pronounce every single syllable of every word of Bhagavad Gita in memory. We could know the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole Bhagavad Gita, the whole Ramayana, the whole Mahabharata, the four Vedas, the Itihastas, the Vedanta Sutra, the Mano Samhita, the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, the Ayurveda Shastras, the Jyotir Shastras, the Vastu Shastras. We could memorize every single one of them, every word, and speak perfect Sanskrit by memory and know nothing if we're envious. Because there's gyan and vigyan. Gyan is the theoretical information that we store in our minds, in our brains, which is necessary. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata. Then the next part is knowledge and renunciation automatically take place with their surrender to Vasudeva. It's the roadmap. Knowledge is a roadmap of where we are, where we want to go, and what we have to do to get there. And all of the various detours and obstacles and storms and temptations and fears and attractions and aversions and successes and failures and honors and dishonors, everything that's going to be between where we are and where we want to go. We must keep focused on that goal. And we must understand how to pass through all these different challenges and phases of life in such a way that we keep moving forward toward the goal. Otherwise, what happens? Manusyanam sahasrishu. It's very rare. In fact, Sri Chaitanya and Mahaprabhu, when he was speaking to Rupa Goswami, he talked about how pure devotional service is very rare. Most people that most living entities are in the lower species in this universe. It's very rare to get a human life. And when you get a human life, it's very rare to actually follow a real spiritual path, religion. And of those people who actually follow some spiritual path of religion, most people just do it for fruitive, mundane results. And of those who actually are trying to cultivate detachment, most people, they want mystic powers or liberation. It's very rare to find anybody who's actually looking for pure love of God, even in the name of religion. All religions. And of those who actually focus on that pure love of God, it's very rare that one achieves it because it's so easy to get distracted. That's why we need association to keep ourselves fixed. So to be the servant of the servant of the servant without envy, the Lord is teaching us. That's a practical way of receiving the mercy of the Lord. It is only the mercy of the Lord, the grace of Krishna, that can carry us through all the dualities, the challenges, and the diversions that are inevitably going to be on our path. Then Rishabhdev, right living at home, after coronated Bharat and training all his other sons, he stayed at home, but he became an avadut. He was an avatar when he was teaching, a very extraordinary example. He just was so immersed, so totally immersed in spiritual revelation. He never thought about whether he should put on clothes or not. He was totally separated from his body internally. So he stopped putting on clothes. He didn't stop putting on clothes. He didn't stop anything. He just didn't do it. You know, it's one thing when you stop something because you want to renounce something, but he forgot about everything. He forgot about clothes. He forgot about eating practically. He forgot about bathing. He just was absorbed. He lived at home like that with his family. You know, how long can you do that? Then he left home and he started traveling everywhere. He was just roaming around. No trains, no planes, no rickshaws. He was just walking. He was walking through the cities and walking through the towns and the villages, through the farmlands and the pastures, into the forests, into the deep jungles, and everywhere walking. And it's described that because he was so completely aloof from the bodily platform, he wasn't talking. You know, years go by, you don't bathe, you don't comb your hair, it described that there were all flies around him. And people thought he was a madman. Wherever he went, the general public, they laughed at him, they ridiculed him, they actually started to hate him. They would throw stones at him. Oh, you fool, you madman. Oh, get out of here. We don't want a person like you around. They didn't know that he was the very, they couldn't recognize him. A few years before, he was the king. They worshiped him. They honored him. He provided literally everything for them. You would think they would say, oh, now the king is a great avadut. Everything we have is by his grace. Let us offer, let us serve him. Let us offer some seva for him. But they didn't recognize. So the very person who was like the, who was greater than their father, they were throwing stones on. They were spitting on. They were picking up dog stool, cat stool, wolf stool, human stool, and throwing it in his face. If he was laying down, they would just throw urine on him. They treated him like a with total disdain, disrespect, ridicule. And Rishabhdev was completely happy. Why was he so happy? Honor, dishonor. He was teaching by example. He was honored as the king of the world, sitting on a throne, and every single person who was satisfied by his rule was coming and worshiping him. And now the same people were absolutely disgracing him. But for him, it was all the same. Because he realized that the eternal soul is not affected by any of these things. Srimad Bhagavatam explains how when we come to that self-realized position, just like the full moon reflects on the surface of the ocean, the Arabian Sea you have here in Mumbai. I don't know how many of you go to the sea, to see the sea, because you know, it's, you know, down the coast near Udupi, it's a beautiful sea, but here it's kind of like Rishabhdev after he became an it's like an Avaduta sea. Nobody bothers, you know. In other parts of the sea, you go to Goa, and there are people spending large sums of money to go in the sun, at the sea, and to bathe in the sea, and to surf in the sea, and to have parties at the sea. But, you know, last I was down there, people were passing stool in the sea. You have seen? You're laughing because you have seen. But when the moon is shining on the surface of the sea, according to the waves, when it's a windy, stormy day, the moon is going. And when it's a very nice, pleasant day, the moon is sitting very peacefully, giving darshan in the reflection of the sea. But actually, the moon's always the same. It's not that it's a full moon, and there's a half moon, and there's a quarter moon, and there's a no moon, Amavasya. The moon is always full. It's not that the moon is shrinking. It's just our perception of it is changing because of the light that's touching it. So the moon's always the same. But when we look at the moon waxing and waning on the surface of the sea, it's a reflection. So similarly, when we realize the fullness, the Satchit Ananda nature of the Atma, the soul, that whatever storm, whatever reflection is on the sea, whether it's peaceful or stormy, we don't identify with that. We identify with who we really are. So Rishabhdev was detached. And actually, he was giving people the opportunity to make spiritual advancement by going. Why was he traveling to all the cities and all the villages and all the towns? He was giving them a chance to have his darshan. He was God. But nobody appreciated. So he was thinking, if nobody appreciates, then why should I give? There's no sense. So he went deep into the forest where no humans were. And he became like a python. He would just lay on the ground. He was a pure vegetarian. But if some vegetables fell in his mouth, he would eat. Otherwise, no need. Just whatever God provides. That's how he was living. And he didn't want any, he didn't want these people to disturb him anymore, who were just so mundane and so just judging a person by how they look, by how they smell. He didn't want to be judged like that. He didn't want to, it was just a waste. So you know what he did? I'll go a little longer, so what I tell you is not just before prasad. He would lay on the ground, he would pass stool and urine, then he would roll in it. The reason he did that, then nobody would want anything to do with him. Then no materialistic people would bother him. The Lord reciprocates according to how we approach him. And wow, when the Lord wants to reciprocate, he can be so creative and so transcendental. Think about it. I'm not going to repeat what I just said, because I think it's already made an impression in your heart. This was millions of years ago he did that, and we're still talking about it. That's God. Somebody else does it. It's not in the Holy Scriptures. It's not meditated on by the greatest saints in history. And ultimately, he just went into a forest in South India, Karnataka, and there was a fire, and he just allowed himself to go and ended his leelas. And then we have Bharat, his son. All his brothers following their father's holy footsteps and his incredible instructions. They cooperated so nicely. They all worked together. And Rishabhdev ruled the world Bharat ruled the world just like Rishabh. He taught everybody how to perfect their lives, how to liberate their souls while performing their particular occupations by seeing everything ultimately as the property of God. This is the very special quality of bhakti. Rupa Goswami, he explained that perfect renunciation is not just to give things up. It's to utilize everything in positive, favorable devotional service with love and affection. The material world is Krishna's property that should be used to help the whole world to live in such a way to never take birth again, to gradually evolve to that state. And that's the way Bharat ruled. He provided every opportunity for everyone. And the whole world was so happy with him that they named the world after him, Bharatvarsha. Even to this day, India is called Bharat. Yes? Named after a king from so long ago. The name India, that's another story. But the name Bharat, that name was given to this place because of the spiritual substance of what Bharat represented. He was an ocean of compassion, an ocean of knowledge, an ocean of love. He had 5 children. And when they grew old enough, even though he was the undisputed king of every direction, he understood that I must set the example. He wasn't attached to the facility, he was attached to the service. We can be attached to our service, but if we become attached to the facilities, facility means the name, the fame, the prestige, the proximity, the property, all of these things. If we become attached to the facilities, then we're very incomplete and imperfect. We may be for the time being, but if we don't have the proper evolution of consciousness, the facilities cause bondage. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains, dharmasya hyabhavargyasya. We should render devotional service and not be detached or distracted from the benefits we get from devotional service. We can get so many things. It's not ours to enjoy. It's for Krishna. So, Bharat, can you imagine his palace, the foods he was eating, the clothes he was wearing, the popularity he had everywhere, the family that loved him so much? His wife was like a goddess. And he did it all so well. But at a certain point, as the king, now you're lucky that you're not the king. Because if you're king, people expect you to leave everything at a certain stage. And he did it. He just walked away from everything with love. He put everything in place so that his whole family was going to go, was going to get enlightened, because he gave them so much. He prepared them so well for what he was going to do. And he went to the Pulaha Ashram in the Himalayas. And he found a place on the banks of the river Gandaki. Gandaki, very, very special place. Wherever that river flows, it's very sacred, because it is the abode of the Lord. From the Gandaki River, Lord Vishnu incarnates as the Shalagram Shila. So many Shalagram Shilas. They are self-manifested Murtis of Vishnu. They're not stones. They don't have to be installed. You just reach in and there's an installed deity, self-manifested in your hand, ready for full worship. That is Shalagram Shila. Therefore, the Gandaki is like the mother of the Lord, because she's given birth to millions of little forms of the Lord. So she's so sacred. And because there are countless Shalagram Shilas within her body, wherever the Gandaki River flows, it's Charanamrit. It's pure. It's the spiritual world. It's Abhishekam. Nectar. So that is where he chose to be. Most people worship Shalagram Srila as Vishnu. Srila Prabhupada in particular, he was seeing Krishna everywhere. Because I remember, I think it was about 1976, Srila Prabhupada, he had given a Shalagram Srila to Jananivas Prabhu in Sri Mayapur Dham. But in all of his temples, there was no Shalagram Srilas anywhere outside of India. As far as I know, it was only in Mayapur. So he wanted to establish the worship of Shalagram Srila in the West. So he personally sent two Shalagram Srilas to New Vrindavan. One's name was Hiranyagarbha, and the other was Sudarshan. But he looked like a Sudarshan Chakra. And he dictated instructions of how to worship Shalagram Srila. And I was way up on a mountain, isolated from the whole community, where the few brahmacharis were living. Nityodita Prabhu, is he here now? Is he somewhere? Oh, he's way in the back, my Lord. Would you like to come and sit with us up here? Do you remember? That's a really nice place. There you are. We all have our karma. What to do? I have to be up here. But he sent these Shalagram Srilas, and he sent a note that was dictated to the person who was bringing the Shalagrams. And I was way up on that hill, and I was supposed to be their pujari. Now, this was scary, because in the West, we had so many conceptions and misconceptions and everything else, because Krishna consciousness was so new in the West. And we were all hearing, for a couple years we heard, I don't know where it came from, that Shalagram Srila worship is so strict that if you commit a single offense, you will either fall down or die. Nothing in between. Do you remember that, Nityadita? You remember that was what we were hearing all the time? So, you know, nobody wanted to worship Shalagram Srila. And then somebody comes from India with two Shalagram Srilas saying, Prabhupada wants to establish Shalagram Srila in the West. And nobody wanted to do that puja. Especially me. Because if anybody knew how many offenses I committed, it was me. I wouldn't survive a day. I don't know, it's not that bad, it's not that bad. Because nobody, even the person who was giving it, said, he didn't really know. He said, it's not that bad. I said, well, how bad is it? He said, well, he said, I think it's almost that bad. But anyways, I was ordered to do it. I tried every way, but okay, I surrendered. And this little note I read, and Srila Prabhupada, he said, you can worship Shalagram, because it's not that you fall down and die, but you do have to avoid making offenses. But sometimes devotees have the tendency to make things really extreme. So the note, Prabhupada said, begin very simple. He said, bathe him with water scented with rose water. Give him bath every day. And then dry him. And then you can put chandan, on his feet and tulsi leaves. Srila Prabhupada said, first class shalagram worship means tulsi leaves. Just bathe him, put some chandan, and tulsi leaves. That's all. And then he said, and you can also paint a face on him. You can give him a dhoti, a chadar, a crown, and a flute. Now, I never saw Vishnu playing a flute. And everyone was telling me he was Vishnu. So I understood Prabhupada was seeing Krishna in Vishnu, because Krishna and Vishnu are one, and he reciprocates according to how we approach him. So Prabhupada was seeing Shalagram Srila as Krishna. So we had a little flute made for him, and a little chadar and dhoti. And as far as putting tulsi leaves on his feet, it's very special to try to understand Shalagram's feet. But we understand his feet are everywhere. You could put them anywhere. Depending on which way you put him on his little throne, his altar. But it was very beautiful. It was very sweet. And then he wrote one more thing. He said, if you want more information, you should write to Jananivas in Mayapur. So I was putting water and chandan and tulsi leaves. And then I was drawing a face. Then I offered a crown, a dhoti, a chadar, and a flute. So that was nice. So Prabhupada directed, if you want to offer more seva, you should write to Jananivas. I wrote to Jananivas. And he told me that I should follow all the 64 items that Lord Chaitanya explained to Sanatan Goswami in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I started doing that, and every morning the puja lasted 2.5 hours. Just drawing little signs and everything like that. And then this book came out, The Archana Padhati, and Jananivas said, now I'm doing this. And I was thinking, what happened is I added everything of the 64 items to Chaitanya Charitamrita. I added, in addition to that, the whole Archana Padhati. What I didn't understand is he did one instead of the other. But I just did both, so now it was taking about 3 hours a day. Just for the morning seva. He's this big, 3 hours. It's really very transcendental. Remember? So Bharat Maharaj was sitting on bank of Gandaki River. He had his little shalagrams, his worship the Lord. And how did he worship the Lord? Yesterday was Pushyabhishek. We quoted the verse, Patram Pushpam Palam Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayachchati. Offer me a fruit, a leaf, a flower, or a little water with devotion, and I will accept it. So Bharat Maharaj, previously, he was the emperor of the planet. Can you imagine the puja he was doing? He was worshiping the Lord, gold and silver plates and what jewelry of diamonds, emeralds, and rubies and sapphires. And he had wonderful temples, wonderful singhasans. He was offering the best of everything he had to the Lord. And in the Gandaki, that same king, with the same devotion, in fact, even more, he would just collect some wild flowers, collect some tulsi leaves, collect some wild fruits perhaps, and the water of the Gandaki River. That's all. He was completely immersed, absorbed in worshiping the Lord with just some leaves and flowers and water. And that's all he ate. He just ate some leaves and flowers and drank some water. The Mahaprasad of the Lord. And by doing that worship, he became so purified. He was only wearing deer skin. He was just sleeping on the riverbank. Soon, he was in so much love for Krishna. Krishna was reciprocating so much. He was always chanting mantras too. When he would see the sunrise, he would offer from the Rig Veda beautiful prayers in honor of Vishnu, who's the presiding Lord in the sun, who through the sun gives life, light, and everything that we survive on. The Gayatri Mantra is an offering of our love, our gratitude, our prayers to Krishna, who appears to us in this universe as the sun. Krishna says in Gita, I am the light of the sun and the moon. But factually, the sun provides everything for life. We're so ungrateful. Sun rises, we put on sunglasses. What you call goggles, or whatever you call them in India. Don't bother me, sun, get out of my eyes. I'm walking in the nice sun in Vrindavan, and people come with these umbrellas. Let me cover you, let me shade you. The sun is this way. Anyways, it's interesting because the sun is very... Are you leaving now? Huh? Okay, thank you. The sun is the source of all life. In a sense, it's the sustainer of life. It's the sun that evaporates the ocean water and makes it into clouds, which bring rain, gives heat. And it's Vishnu, it's Krishna within the sun that's providing for all of us. So he would worship the Lord in the sun, he would worship the Lord everywhere. He was seeing Krishna in everything. He wasn't seeing that everything was Krishna, but he was seeing that Krishna was in everything. There's a very, very crucial difference between the two. Krishna tells in Gita, I am everywhere in and everything, but everything is not me. That means Krishna is in it, he's the source of it, but still he is beyond it. He's the origin of everything that exists. Just as the sun planet provides sun rays that reach everywhere, but still the sun planet is the sun rays, but at the same time is not. And Bharat, he was fully absorbed in worshiping Krishna in everything. And he would weep and cry in ecstasy when he would offer little leaves to Krishna. His hairs would stand on end. His body would tremble because Krishna was reciprocating with those leaves that were offered with devotion. One day, early in the morning, after he took his bath in the Gandaki River and performed his morning duties, he was sitting in his meditation. and a female deer, a doe. She came just close to him to drink the water. As she was drinking, you were supposed to get scared. You're laughing at me. It's a lion roared. And when that lion roared, the deer usually get eaten by lions. So she became so frantically afraid for her life, without even a second thought, instinctively, she leapt across the river. And because that lion's roar scared her so much, she was pregnant. She had a miscarriage as she was going across the river. And the little deer fell in the water. She was on the other side, and deers can't swim. They could jump. There was absolutely nothing she could do for her little baby. She was scared because of the lion. It was so traumatic. Now she was away from all the rest of the deers in her family, and her little baby was on the verge of death. And there was nothing she could do about it. That mother deer was so totally heartbroken. She laid down on the ground and gave up her life. Bharat was chanting his mantras, doing his meditation, worshiping the Lord, and he sees the mother's dead, and then right beside him, floating in the water, is this newborn baby little deer on the verge of drowning to death. Bharat felt so much sympathy and compassion, he reached down and picked up the little baby, put him on the ground. Now that he saved the deer out of compassion, was it any better? The deer can't survive without a mother. Where was he going to get food? Who was going to protect it from the lions and the wolves and the jackals and the boars? So Bharat understood, I have to be the father, the mother, the caretaker of this deer. So he started collecting grass and feeding the deer. The little deer ate the grass. Very happy. He was really making a difference in the life of this deer. Then he would take the deer for walks. The deer would follow. Wherever he would go, the deer would follow behind. Little baby deer. They're so nice, sweet little people. And he would just, the little deer was totally dependent on Bharat. So everywhere he went, he would go and Bharat would sit for meditation, and the deer with her wet, warm nose would go toot, 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 toot. And because, you know, of his affection for the deer, it felt so nice that he would stop meditating, and the deer had an itch. So Bharat would scratch the itch. The deer wanted special grass. Bharat would get special grass. In this way, he started taking care of the deer. And soon, the deer demanded so much of his attention that he had no time for seva. There was no time to worship the Lord. There was no time to chant mantras. There was no time for doing his meditations, his pujas. Actually, there was time. But he just didn't understand. He became attached. And soon, even he understood. He was very extremely intelligent man. He was thinking that this deer is completely dependent on me, and he's so nice, and he's so I like him so much. And I know I'm giving up my meditation and my puja and all of my spiritual practices, but it's justified because it's because of my totally unselfish affection to protect this deer, God's little deer. And sometimes the deer would take a walk and not come home on time. And he was beside himself, worrying with grief. Where is my deer? Where is my deer? He'd be searching, calling out the deer's name, asking the sun and the moon whether they saw the deer. And Srila Prabhupada explains in our Acharyas, Sukadeva Goswami, that to take care of someone in need is wonderful. But we should never lose the focus of the real need. The real need of every living being is the need of the soul to be liberated from suffering. Because on a physical level or emotional level, whatever help you give a person, it's only a temporary band-aid at the best. Srila Prabhupada would often say, janma mrityu jara vyadhi, that the real problems of life are birth, old age, disease, and death. Unless we solve these problems, whatever else we do, it's just a temporary relief. But there's no solution. You feed a hungry person, they're going to be hungry the next day. You heal a sick man, woman, they're going to get sick. And eventually, they're going to grow old and they're going to die. And padam padam yadvi padam natesham, we don't even know when that's going to happen. It could happen today or tomorrow, no matter what we do for anybody. So philanthropy, simply based on the body of mind, it's the mode of goodness. But a transcendentalist does those things, but all for the purpose of ultimately harmonizing it with the liberation of the soul. So Bharat was not wrong in being sympathetic and compassionate and saving that deer's life. It's not that the deer is drowning and going by, and Bharat is just, you're in Maya, deer. And the deer is about to drown to death and looking with helpless, piteous eyes at Bharat, please save me. And Bharat says, you are not this body. It's the way devotees could get sometimes. So it was right of him to take the deer out. But what was wrong is he lost his balance. And he became so engrossed in the bodily philanthropic care of the deer that he forgot his own spiritual practice and he forgot what he needed to do to liberate the deer's beautiful eternal soul. And that was a disaster, the greatest loss. If you don't have something, you can't give something. If we're Krishna conscious, we could give Krishna conscious. If we have love of God, we could give love of God. If somebody's drowning, you have to know to swim if you want to help them. So Bharat's mistake was simply he was distracted from the essence. And with any type of altruism, philanthropy, or charitable work, that tendency is there. That we can become so engrossed in the physical and emotional problems and sufferings of people that we forget about our own soul and we forget about their souls. That's what Bharat did. He fell from all of his spiritual practices and simply became attached to the deer. And in due course of time, death approached. And as he was dying, that little deer was sitting next to him, and he was looking at the deer. Oh, I'm being taken away from you. And he died, totally immersed in thoughts of his dear, dear. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajyante kalevaram. Krishna tells in Gita what our consciousness is at the time of death. We attain that. So Bharat woke up and had the body of a deer, a baby deer, little baby deer. But because neha bikramanasosti pratyavayonavityate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat, any spiritual progress we make is never lost. Bharat, he actually had attained a state of bhava, of love for Krishna, but it wasn't yet perfected. Once you attain the state of prema, the mature level of bhava, at that time, you're completely absorbed in your natural constitutional position in ecstatic love for Krishna. But at any level below that perfectional state, even bhava, we can still, if we're not very careful, we can be distracted. But still, nothing is lost. That distraction is just a diversion. So because of his previous life of so much devotional service and so much remembrance of Krishna and chanting Krishna's names, he had the exact same consciousness as he did, with full awareness of everything he did in his past life as a deer. Here's another example. You can't just see by looking at something. Anybody who saw that little deer just saw a little deer. But what they didn't understand, within the mind of that deer was the great scholar, King Bharat, who became a yogi, an ascetic, and attained 99% perfection. And that was all there. And he realized, what a fool I was. Helping the deer is, that was appropriate. But to give up my service to God, to forget the spiritual nature of myself and the deer, that was ignorance. So he did not want to associate with anything except what would bring him to Krishna. So just after his birth, he left home and went to the same place, the Pulaha forest on the banks of the Gandaki River. And there he would just listen to great sages and saints chanting mantras. The little deer would just listen. And he was totally immersed in meditating on Krishna, Narayan. And he just waited and waited. And in due course of time, he gave up his life, totally absorbed in Krishna. And Krishna wanted to teach the world some good lessons. So he took his next birth in a Brahmin family. And people called him Jad Bharat. His father was a very great learned Brahmin. And he was extraordinarily different. Well, one little phone makes everyone so happy. Devotees are so simple. Jad Bharat, he total had remembrance of his life as a deer, as his life as an ascetic, as the life of a king. And he didn't want to be distracted by anything. So like his father, he, from his childhood, he was like an avaduta. Because he didn't want anyone to appreciate him. He didn't want any attachments. So he would do everything different than everyone else. They would teach him how to do something, he would do it the opposite way. And he would hardly ever say a single word. Typical example. His father taught him, when you respond to nature, after you do it, you wash with this water. So Bharat would wash with the water until all the water was used up, and then he would respond to nature. His father said, no, not like this, like this. And then he would do it again the same way. No, not like this, like this. And he would maybe do something different the way he washed himself, but then he would do it, he would respond afterward. And his brothers were watching. This brother of ours is a crazy person. He's stupid, he's ignorant. And they hated him. And he loved them, but his love was different. He loved their souls. But again, they were judging him on these superficial, external, physical considerations. And ultimately, the father, who loved him and was patient with him and gave him every chance, and the father never gave up on him. Ultimately, the father died. And the brothers, what are we going to do with this brother? We know the story. There was a field, and they wanted to keep the crows away, so they just had him standing there. And he would just do what anybody said. Just stand here, you fool. And he just stood there. He was so compassionate. The crows probably liked him. But then some dacoits kidnapped him. And they thought, oh, they brought him to their dacoit king, and he was going to do some puja to Kali, a human sacrifice. And Jad Bharat was very much like his father when he became an avaduta. He was very beautiful, he was very strong, but he just didn't relate to society in a conventional way. So they thought he was a madman, but he had a very good body. Oh, this is fine. We will sacrifice you to the goddess. Okay. And he didn't resist. He didn't try to escape. He totally, Krishna, whatever you want to do with me, I am yours. That was his internal consciousness. So they bathed him and they dressed him up and they put him on the altar. He knew what was happening. He wasn't dumb. He was absolutely, transcendentally enlightened. But he was totally surrendered. So they put him on the altar, and the priest came with a big sword that was meant to cut off his head. He just looked up. They raised the sword in front of the deity of the goddess, and he was ready to go. goddess Kali from the deity. Rah! She screamed. She grabbed the sword and chopped off the head of the priest who went rolling and bloody. And then she took the sword and she cut off the dacoit chief's head, and then all the other dacoits started running around, and Kali started manifesting all these different forms, and they were all grabbing the dacoits and cutting off their heads, and then they were taking their heads and playing, throwing their heads to each other, screaming, till the whole gang of all the dacoits were finished. And Judd Barras is like standing. No emotions. He surrendered whatever Krishna wants. He was just flowing with the river of Krishna's grace in whatever way. He was so absorbed internally in fulfillment that life or death or goddess Kali, whatever happens, he was such a foundation of ecstasy, meditating on Krishna in his heart. And then goddess Kali, all the forms came back into her, and the goddess offered her obeisances and her blessings to Judd Bharat, because she recognized that he is a Mahatma. He is a true saint. So he left. He didn't put this incident on his website or anything. They didn't have websites in those days. But it's not that he broadcasted what Kali did for him. It wasn't like that. He just went and started walking like an avaduta through the forests. And the king, Rahugana, the king of the world, was actually, a descendant of Judd Bharat. There was Bharat Maharaj, yes, he was a king. He didn't understand that the greatest king that ever lived was this avaduta. He just saw him as he was being carried on a palanquin, and one of the palanquin carriers was injured, so they had to find somebody else. Somebody who was strong. So it just so happened that Judd Bharat happened to walk by just in his transcendental days of bhakti. And they grabbed him by force. You be palanquin carrier. All right. So they put him in the palanquin. He was very strong looking. And they started go, palanquin carriers, there's four of them. You have to be synchronized. Very important. If anybody's independent of the others, it creates a terrible disturbance. So they're walking, and the king's on the palanquin. All of a sudden, everything is shaken around. The palanquin is, some people are going one way, another, other people another way. Palanquin's tipping over, and what's happening? The king is, what is this? And everybody's pointing at him, Judd Bharat. Judd Bharat didn't say anything. But what he was thinking in his mind is he was carrying it. He was cooperating very nicely. But then an ant crossed the path. May have even been many ants. And he would not step on an ant. Amanina manadena. Mahaprabhu has said, told us, offer all respect to others, do not expect respect for oneself. He had that consciousness to such an extent that he honored even an ant as much as he honored the king. Because he was a king, and he was a deer. He was so many things. So with his realizations and experiences, he didn't want to injure the ant. So he stopped walking. But the other carriers, they didn't They weren't looking for ants. So the king chastised him. Said, if you do that again, you'll be punished. Chatbarajas. Paliquin walked, another ant. He stops, everyone else is moving very fast, because the king wanted to get to where they're all walking really fast, and stops, and everything gets shaken up, and they all point to, the king said, I'm going to punish all of you. He said, don't punish us, it's him, he's ignorant, he's a fool, he keeps stopping, he's disobedient. King chastises him, I will kill you if you do that again. Practically like that, he was really mad. Chatbarajas takes it. There was a lot of ants in those days, like today. He stopped again, and the king was chastising him so bad, calling him all bad names. And then for the first time in his life, Chatbarajas spoke to somebody. Can you imagine? He was a grown man. First time in his life he was willing to speak. And what came out of his mouth? He was speaking to the Emperor Rahugana. He said, you are calling me your servant, your slave, and you are calling yourself the king, but in your next life, I may be the king, you may be the slave. What is this body that you're so attached to? What is this ego that I am a king, I am a carrier? We are all eternal souls. When we get bound up by the misconceptions of these external, physical, mental identities, and we forget who we really are, we become victim to so much bondage and suffering. He spoke such beautiful, transcendental knowledge, like the king had never heard before. Maharaj Rahugana came off of his palanquin and prostrated himself in total surrender at the feet of his own palanquin carrier. He said, you are my guru. I beg forgiveness for whatever I've said to you. I surrender to you. And then the king started asking him the highest, deepest, most important questions that every human being needs to resolve in their life. And he sat in total submission as Chatbarajas instructed him. Maharaj Rahugana was completely enlightened. He knew exactly what was to be done in life. He understood what is Krishna, what is bhakti, what is the highest goal, what is attachment, and what is detachment. And after this beautiful historical conversation, the king honored and worshipped Chatbarajas, and Chatbarajas just went into his mood of an avaduta again, went back into the forest. What an example this was for Maharaj Rahugana as he watched. The greatest saint, the greatest scholar on earth, doesn't want anything for himself. He was just waiting for someone to open their hearts to hear from him. And he became perfect. These stories from Srimad Bhagavatam, from other scriptures, reveal such essential truths to us. What we should be striving for, what we should be prioritizing, which we should be careful. Careful to avoid. And most of all, how to properly balance our perceptions in this world. Krishna tells in Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, I'm never lost, nor is that person ever lost to me. In the association of devotees, with our sadhana, with our regulative principles, they are all extremely necessary to cultivate this consciousness where we could see Krishna everywhere and everything in Krishna. Then we're free of envy, we're free of fear, we're free of doubt. Cheto darpana marajanam bhava mahadavagni nivapanam. Anandam buddhivardhanam. When the heart is cleaned through the practice of these principles of bhakti, then we taste the ecstasy we're always anxious for. But whoever we are, at whatever level we're at, we should always feel that humility, that I need the association of devotees. I need to absorb myself in the holy names every day. I need to absorb myself in Srimad Bhagavatam and these great scriptures. Because there's danger at every step in this world, physically, emotionally, and also spiritually. So if we have that strong spiritual foundation and the proper character and the proper attitude, seeking the essence, seeking the goal, avoiding offenses as far as possible. Konteya pratijanehi name bhakta pranashati. Krishna will always protect us. And even if we slip up, if we're sincere and striving, Krishna will be there to pick us up, as he did Bharat Maharaj, as he will do for any sincere devotee. So let us be grateful, enthusiastic, determined, and chant the holy name. Is Arundhati Devi here somewhere? One of the very, very senior disciples of Prabhupada is here. Nityodita Prabhu, would you like to speak something? You can come to where everyone may see you, please. Jai Srila Prabhu, would you like to speak a few words also? You may come up if you like.
Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. Hare Krishna.
His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, our beloved spiritual master, referred to his disciples when they came to India as his dancing white elephants. So when we come to India, it is nice if we dance a little bit, and it can be of some interest to see how these Westerners are able to take up this process of Krishna Bhakti from Bharatvarsh. Hare Krishna. Now, I won't speak for very long, I would think a minute or two, because I, like you, have been sitting on the wooden floor and I know how it feels. And I don't think I'll attempt too many roars like Maharaj.
Rah!
Briefly, I will just say what a great pleasure it is for me to be in your association, in the association of the very wonderful devotees of Srila Prabhupada. I thank you from the bottom of my heart that you're taking so seriously to this process, and I look forward to visiting many, many times for spiritual rejuvenation and also to render some service to all of you. I would like that very much. So thank you, thank you, thank you. I know Nietzsche.
How do I say the name again? I've lost the name. Nietzsche Ditya.
Nietzsche Ditya Prabhu has something very important to say, so I will pass them on to you. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
It's just amazing. It is amazing to be here with all of you. And last night's festival there's no really words to describe the feeling that I had, that I was in the spiritual world, dancing with the devotees and sharing love, sprinkling those flower petals on each other after the whole day was just so perfect. This kind of experience it's invaluable for our progressive march in Krishna consciousness. These festivals and satsangs are embedded into our hearts. This is the reason why these kind of festivals are very important, these kind of gatherings, because I can just speak for myself. My brain is so filled with so many memories of material life that the only way to get them out is to overflow them with the memories of spiritual experiences and the experience we had last night. I'm hoping that will put me over the edge to become a devotee again. I think the big lesson we had from the lectures last day was, you know, we can't judge a book by its cover. We can't judge a person by their looks. We have to go deep and become serious about our chanting, about our hearing, and application of Krishna consciousness. It's so important. because we can be chanting for years and years and years unless we have a real desire to apply the teachings, then we just remain shallow devotees. We see only the surface. So I came to India to become surcharged. This trip is a break for me to become surcharged and to refocus my attention on the spiritual message of Srila Prabhupada, which is to focus ourselves on becoming lovers of Krishna. And love is a very deep word. We use it so cheaply. But loving Krishna is a very deep experience that is gained through tremendous austerities, practice, and ultimately the desire to have that love. So I'm indebted to Radhanath Maharaj from the very beginning of my Krishna consciousness. He was there showing what love of Krishna is. I have the great fortune of being able to serve Radha Vrindavan Nath, Radha Krishna forms at New Vrindavan every Wednesday. I go on the altar. That's a chance to enter into the spiritual world, and whatever feelings, you know, I have or whatever experience I have toward them, these are really the, you know, reflections of what the experiences I had worshiping Radha Vrindavan Nath with Radhanath Maharaj on that lonely mountain on a hill. It wasn't so lonely. I mean, it was Krishna was there. So carrying me forward again here at this wonderful temple that you've manifested out of one tiny little room when we first came here. It's just one tiny little room. It's just such a masterpiece. And not just an artistic masterpiece, it's a devotional masterpiece. And I am just so humbled at seeing Radhanath Maharaj's accomplishments from our early days of just milking cows at New Vrindavan and trying to cook a little feast together for their lordships. You've made such a wonderful feast by offering all these beautiful souls to the lotus feet of Radha Gopinath, and I am extremely humbled by your devotional service, and I pray that I'm able to remain in your association as your friend and servant. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Kostubha Prabhu, you'd like to speak something? Come, please. Yes, yes. Kostubha Prabhu is a very dear disciple of His Holiness Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj. No.
Om Ajnana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I'm also very grateful, Maharaj, for your association and for the association of all the devotees here. And I definitely won't speak very long, so I'll just try to share just a little bit of that appreciation. And for a fallen soul myself, I feel very, sometimes Krishna feels near at special times when devotees can create, when their devotion manifests in beautiful ways like last night. But most of the time in my life, I'm forgetful and in one sense, I feel very distant from Krishna. But through Maharaj's association, personal association, or hearing him speak. I feel through him Krishna's qualities coming through. And that's my, in one sense, that's how I experience Krishna. But I also see that here in this very special place in all of the world, I feel that through Maharaj's influence and his mercy that I feel through all of you, I see those same qualities. I see Maharaj's qualities come through, which are ultimately those beautiful qualities that Krishna has manifesting in this whole community. So I'm always so grateful, myself and my wife, Gita Priya, who is somewhere out here. We feel so grateful to be able to return here regularly and receive darshan of Krishna through all of you. So thank you also very much, and please allow us to come back again and again.
Jai Srila Prabhu has sympathized with your condition of sitting on that wooden floor for so long. But we especially made this wooden floor so that you could happily dance upon it. So everyone, please, let us dance.